Hello and welcome to the Draft Podcast on Baseball America's podcast feed. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. And apologies for the week one delay. That's definitely an issue on my end, Peter. But how are you doing now that we're 2 weeks into college baseball?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to hop back on with you. And we've got an actual sample size under our belt. So I'm excited to dive into what we've seen here so far.
Yeah, something of a sample size. I'm not sure how exactly you view 2 weeks. I think for pitchers, it's a lot easier to have quicker takeaways in my mind. And then for hitters, obviously, there are some guys who are kind of sprinting out of the gates and looking phenomenal. We'll talk about a few of those players today, but it definitely feels like you need to give at least a month or so maybe before we can really have any takeaways from the hitting side and any strong takeaways. But I feel like there are interesting things you can pick up on, again, especially for pitchers, but I guess with both pitchers and hitters, if you're looking at more like mechanical changes, how players are setting up in the box, if they're like noticeable approach changes, strength changes, the tools, you can see maybe ticking up or regressing a little bit quicker than maybe you want to buy into a statistical performance. But how have the first 2 weeks been for you, Peter, in terms of expectations for just players and covering the draft overall versus maybe what the reality actually is?
They've been great. This is going to be like a classic middleman on the fence answer. But like as expected and what was going to be the case regardless, some guys have been super, super impressed with, and then others naturally have gotten off to a little bit of a slower start. And I'm not as, I don't want to say that the first 2 weeks have really affected any of my, I guess, outlook for July that drastically, because I think it would just be irresponsible, but guys have certainly bolstered their cases for the area in which we have them projected. So yeah, it's been solid.
Yeah. Well, let's get into some of these players. I mean, I wrote about 10 players on the site today as we record this podcast. If you're listening, you can read the piece in full. It's more 10 players who are doing something interesting, whether that's positive or negative. There are a few players that still have some questions, but I'm just trying to get into them a little deeper. We'll talk about a few of those players, but is there any one player who's really just jumped out and wowed you more than anyone else to start the year? I have one guy in mind, and I don't think you have the same one. And it could be guys that you've seen in person. I know that you got to see Kansas State early on. It could be guys that you've just been able to watch over streams or on TV, or just players that you're impressed with the performance.
I've got two of them. You probably know both, because neither are going to be hot takes. But if the draft were tomorrow and I had the first overall pick, I'm pretty sold that I would be taking Travis Bezzano from Oregon State. He came out of the gate, yeah, Guns blazing. It's really been like with Bezzano, I know I've been a huge advocate for him and a fan of his game for a while now, and what he's done hasn't been overly shocking even for as well as he's performed, but I mean the swing is just so beautiful, it's so aesthetically pleasing. Like the barrel control and barrel skills are off the charts, combined with his double plus bat speed. It's such an explosive operation. I mean, it looks like to the pull side, like it's 55 borderline six power that he's been getting to in games. And then he's got the same really good approach. As our good friend, Jeff Pont says, his eyes are God's track, man. And he's just looked really good in all facets of the game. I think for me, he's my 1-1 guy, not to get too reactionary. And then on the pitching side,
well, let's stay here for a second, because I feel like you have always been a very strong Travis Bezzano proponent. I thought over the offseason I had pulled you over to the JJ Weatherholt bandwagon of things, just maybe with the difference in power. But I think you're right. The power uptick he's shown is impressive. He's already got 5 home runs through his first 8 games of the season this year. His career high with Oregon State is 11 home runs in a season. He did that in 2023. It does seem like there is a change in terms of the power he's getting to. If he keeps up this pace, I mean, he's not going to keep up this pace over the full season, but we should be looking at a career high in homers. I'm curious what the exit velocity data is going to look like. It seems like he's maybe sacrificed a tick of contact to get to that power, but I think most teams and most scouts would be perfectly fine with the sort of trade-off he's had so far. So that's an interesting name. I want to, before you get into your pitchers, I want to just mention another hitter that I feel like, I don't necessarily know that that I would take him 1-1 if the draft were today, but I think he's certainly putting himself in the elite tier of hitters in this class and is making a case for 1-1. And that's Georgia's Charlie Condon. Mm-hmm. Even before the second week, I've just been asking scouts as I'm at games, like what they think of the class, kind of running over our top names of them. And even before the first weekend series was completed, I had a few scouts say, you know, Charlie Condon, like, yeah, we had him. I think we have him number 8 on the board right now. There are a lot of scouts who thought he should be kind of inside that top 5, top 6. And then he has put together 8 games of multi-hit efforts. He has 4 home runs. He's got 5 doubles. He's played third base, left field, and first base already in this small stretch. The hitting chops look great. The power is obviously great. It's probably double plus game power, which is impressive. So if you feel better about his defensive versatility, I think he's going to put himself right in line with where Nick Kurtz is on the board. And it wouldn't shock me if there are people who are considering him or thought of him as just the number one talent in the class. So I think these are our two maybe biggest up arrow performers of this elite group at the very top of our board so far, Charlie Condon and Travis Bezzana.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Condon. He's been going gangbusters to start. The contact rates have been outstanding. I think he's running a 91% overall contact rate. You mentioned he's had no issue getting into his borderline double plus raw power in games. The hit tool is plus to boot. And then the quality of impact that he's generating on a consistent basis is super, super impressive. Like none of his hits to this point, whether it's been the bombs that he's hit or even just singles, none of them have really been cheap. Like they have all been square on the barrel and absolutely melted. And I think that, again, it's been just 2 weeks, but having him, like you said, in that Kurtz range, like I think for me, he's right there with him early on. So yeah, I'm very looking forward to SEC play beginning. And
absolutely. And I was kind of surprised with how solid he looked at third base. Again, he's kind of bounced around defensively. But I just pulled up some video of him playing the position. He moved around well. He made a couple nice throws. He's made some routine plays. I don't think he's long-term a third baseman. I think he probably just fits best in a corner outfield spot. But the fact that he is showing a little bit better athleticism, I think, than scouts were expecting early this year. He made one fairly slick, kind of over-the-fence, foul territory grab. I think it was as a left fielder at that point. But he's moved around pretty well. And yeah, Nick Kurtz has the lefty hitting advantage. Condon is a right-handed hitter. But, I mean, his track, again, you mentioned it, we need to wait till SEC play. Like, for all these hitters, I think it's a lot easier to kind of boost your stats early in the season until you start consistently playing strong competition. Although I think for Bezzana, he's faced a pretty challenging slate so far. But yeah, I just think if you look at Condon's track record and performance as a hitter in his year plus now, it's pretty phenomenal. And if he keeps up this sort of pace, he's going to have some silly stats at the end of the season in terms of his just career performance.
Yeah, I mean, there are no holes in the track record. Again, I'm excited to see him kind of get into SEC play because that'll be very telling and I guess validating in a sense for where we at least internally have him slotted. So it'll be fun to follow. And it was a good point on the defense as well, because I think there was some concern at least heading into this year, and there might still be a little concern depending on who you ask, that he ends up at first base long term. But I know at least from watching him and just how he moves, I think it's almost a worst case left field type scenario, which again, it's not necessarily the sexiest position to end up at long term and to have a guy pegged as that right now, but it is better than a right first baseman. So
yeah, I think just the fact that I'm not thinking of him as a first base DH only type really does help the profile here, especially when a lot of his peers, the guys that he's going to be stacking up against, are still corner profiles. So
yeah, no, it'll be fun to follow.
Yeah. All right. Well, you were going to mention a pitcher. So I guess if you have an arm you want to talk about, we can get into that as well.
I was going to say when you mentioned Bezzana and the quality of competition he faced, it was like a perfect alley-oop type segue, like the Wade to LeBron gif. And I think it's hard to not start with Hagan Smith and what he did last Friday night. I mean, I went back and watched the entire thing on Synergy because I'm not a Flow Sports subscriber. but I mean, it was, I was left speechless. I think most people were keeping up via Twitter, and the Arkansas Twitter account did a great job of regularly tweeting out what he was doing. So it was and in video form. So it was rather easy to kind of watch what he was up to. But again, it was six shutout hitless innings. If he allowed a hit, it was one knock or two hits.
I believe it was one drag bunt early on and then another hit. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was two hits across six shutout with 17 punch outs. and it was just a masterful performance in every sense of the word. And it was he could have done this against really any team in the country. He could have done it against Arkansas Pine Bluff, no offense to the Golden Lions, but he could have done that and people still would be raving about what he did just because of the level of difficulty. But Oregon State is one of the best teams in the country. Early on, they have arguably one of, if not the best lineups in the country. And it was just flat out dominant. He was 97 to 99 with his fastball, plenty of run and sink to the arm side. He commanded it extremely well. And then he paired it with a lethal mid to high 80s slider. Tons of long sweeping action with some teeth.
Yeah.
Again, it's a pitch that he had great feel for. Command and control were advanced. He dominated with both, like the sliders comfortably plus, same with the heater. And then he also occasionally mixed in a changeup. And I, like, 6'3 lefty, like he in that outing looked the part of a potential frontline starter. And you add in the aspect and the added bonus that he is a left-handed pitcher. And I mean, with that start alone, obviously he's not going to go out and do that every time, but that is going to stick. That's going to be seared into everyone's mind for the rest of the season. And as we lead up to July, I know it will be with me, and like top 10 type of upside is certainly not out of the question. And he'll be competing for being the first college arm off the board. I'm curious what you thought.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a just electric performance. I think it's probably the most dominant pitching outing that we've seen so far this season. He struck out 17 of the 22 batters he faced. The stuff was explosive. Like you said, I think it's probably at this point, I would struggle to come up with a left-handed pitcher in the class who had better pure stuff than Hagan Smith right now. And really what impressed me more than the pure stuff, because I think everyone knew that his pure stuff was pretty electric, was just the way he was doing it. I compared this start to some of his outings and how he looked in 2023. Again, you mentioned his size. He's listed at 6'3", 225 pounds. He looks a little bit more physical, in a little bit better shape this year than last year. I think that translated to a slightly easier delivery. In this outing in particular, it looks like his arm speed is almost a little bit quicker too, but there's just less recoil, less effort in the delivery right now than I saw from a year ago. And if that can lead to more consistent command with his fastball and his slider, yeah, it's a pretty explosive combination. He threw 59 of his 78 pitches for strikes. He got ahead in the count in 13 of the 22 at bats that he had. So if he's able to just kind of stack outings, and obviously you don't need to strike out 17 batters each outing, but if he can just establish the zone with his fastball to set up that explosive slider, and he's going to be sitting in the mid to high 90s with the fastball touching 100 from the left side, you just feel a little bit better about his ability to start at the next level. And I think the refinements he's made to delivery and the ease of that delivery this year is maybe more impressive than any sort of velocity or slider filth. Because the biggest question with him, I think he's going to have two big questions moving forward. The track record of his health. He already has a Tommy John surgery on the resume from high school. And then, like, what's the role? Is he a starter? Is he a reliever? He's kind of been effectively wild in a starting role for Arkansas. So if he can take a notable step forward with his strikes, with his command, I think the delivery already looks a little bit better. I think maybe that could separate him from some of the other pitchers, and especially left-handed pitchers in this class. But I think, I mean, a question you're going to have with Hagen Smith, a question you're going to have with Chase Burns, a question you're going to have with Brody Brecht is, like, these guys so far have flashed it. They've done it in one outing. His first outing of the season, he went one inning. He allowed 3 earned runs. He walked 2. He struck out 2 against James Madison. I think Chase Burns is the same deal. His week one was pretty explosive. It was electric. It looked locked in. The next week, he struggled a little bit more with command. I think Brody Brecht has struck out tons of batters in both his starts, but he's been a little all over the place and erratic. So I think the consistency within starts, the consistency from start to start, is going to be really what separates these pitchers in the long run and in the draft overall. But certainly Hagen Smith's outing last weekend was especially dominant and exciting.
Absolutely. And I think that you brought up a few really good points. And one is, of course, and everyone listening to this knows this, that he's not going to go out and do what he did every single start on Friday night. If he does, then he is going 1-1. I think the continuation and of the general themes that he flashed is going to be key. Like you said, the improved command and control, he's not going to be dotting everything up and have seemingly video game like control and command of his offerings for the rest of the year, but just consistency in that regard. The consistency in the sequencing of pitching, like the pitchability aspect of it. And again, you mentioned the health, that'll be a big one. And then if he's just able to keep, as you said, and put it perfectly, if he's just able to keep stacking these starts, and mitigate and kind of quell any sort of questions people have about him starting, he's not going to last very long. And I think that when you look down the board and you look up and down the board right now at these pitchers, the one guy who I think has helped his cause early, again, not to segue off of Hagen Smith, but of guys in my book, at least, who are definite starters professionally, is Jonathan Santucci at Duke. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, but I think he's looked exceptional in the first couple of weeks. And again, with him, the command has been a little bit scattered. But the slider's been plus. He's actually leaned pretty heavily on his slider early on.
Yeah.
I think he's throwing it just as much, if not more, than his heater.
Yeah, he's definitely throwing it more. In the second start, he used it 71% of the time. I can see. I think it's a no-doubt plus slider. And I'd say he, in terms of left-handed pitchers like Hagen Smith and Jonathan Santucci, it wouldn't be surprising if both those guys have kind of leaped over Josh Hartle at Wake Forest at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. At least early on, I'd take both over Josh, and it's not necessarily a knock on Josh and more so just how good both Santucci and Smith have looked in the early going. But with Santucci, you've got a super athletic, aesthetically pleasing delivery with clean arm action. That fastball has been 93 to 96 up to 97 a few times with its trademark carry, especially up in the zone. And then you mentioned it, sliders plus. He hasn't thrown the changeup a whole lot. He's only thrown it a handful of times. But that's a pitch that I know this fall and last season, this fall and last spring, has flashed 55, borderline 6. So,
yeah, I remember we were talking about him as having like a chance for 3 legitimate plus offerings. And I think that's maybe my biggest question with Santucci moving forward. He's struck out 17 batters in his first 11 innings of work over 2 outings. He's been pretty dominant. He really hasn't need to diversify the pitch mix too much because the slider has just been so good, so overpowering. But through 2 starts, he's used the slider 61% of the time, the fastball just 38% of the time, the changeup just 1% of the time. Like you said, only a few handfuls. In his second outing of the season, he generated 22 whiffs with the slider. He was pitching backwards off that pitch, which maybe you'd expect given that usage rate. And it really feels like he has better feel, or early in the season in these few starts, he's had better feel to land the slider 4 strikes than the fastball. But the fastball quality is so good, both in terms of velocity and shape. I'm really curious to see what the fastball command is going to look like moving forward. That should be a pitch that he's able to establish the zone, dominate the zone, and make that slider play up even more. So that's maybe an area of like nitpickiness that you can look at right now. It's weird for a left-handed pitcher who's sitting in the mid-90s with that sort of riding life who's throwing a fastball less than 40% of the time. I'm very curious to see how his pitch usage is going to track moving forward, because that is a very high slider rate for a guy that you expect and hope will be a starter at the next level. Although maybe there are some teams who probably love that. I mean, there are a lot of big league teams at this point are just trying to throw sliders more and more often, but I'm not sure at what point you get too extreme where it's like, okay, how much can you actually locate and command the fastball?
Yeah, I mean, early where it's almost 65% of the time, rather, it's a little bit like, whoa, especially when you mentioned where he's got a borderline plus heater in his back pocket as well. And I think that the feel that he has for the slider only adds to its effectiveness. And I'm with you that in watching these first couple of starts that he looks more comfortable almost and has more advanced feel for that slider, which is very impressive. But again, I'd like to see the command and control and the fastball maybe tick up a little bit. The usage rate, I'm sure will just rise and more level out with time as we get into the season. But if he is able to take a little bit of a step forward in that department, I'd be encouraged. And then I'm also curious to see how much he does mix in that changeup, because I am a big fan of it. I'm kind of a sucker, like a lot of people are, for a good left-handed pitcher changeup.
Oh yeah, you don't have to tell me. And I think his changeup is like pretty significantly better than a guy like Hagen Smith. And I think Hagen Smith last year actually used the changeup a decent amount. I would be really excited to see Santucci push like a 10% usage rate with his changeup, because I do think it is a really good pitch. I just want to see it more often.
Yeah, no, and like you said, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. I think last year he threw it less than 10% of the time. If he's even just floating around that range, if not a little more, just kind of flashing it and mixing it in, however many times he does it per start, he hasn't really needed it early on. There's no reason to kind of push the envelope when he's been dominating with the fastball and slider against Indiana, and I'm blanking on who he threw against last Friday, but no, he's another one that I've been very
Northwestern.
Okay, yeah, against Indiana and Northwestern. Again, he has no reason to, I guess, force it, but one thing I'll be curious about and looking forward to as we keep going. But he is another, at least, arm that has stuck out in my mind pretty early.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, I've got a hitter that I saw early on who's been pretty good. Do you have any other hitters outside of maybe our top end guys like Bazzana and Condon who you've been excited about? I know you've long been a Caleb Lomavita guy, and it sounds like he's taken a pretty strong start to the season.
I was going to say, before you threw in the Lomavita there at the end, I was going to say he'll probably roll my eyes, because that's exactly where I was going, and I know I've been beating the Loma Vita drum for a while now, and saying that he's my number one college catcher was a little bit of a hot take heading into the season. But so far he's looked excellent.
I don't think it was crazy hot. Those guys are all reasonably close together, and we have them stacked pretty tightly right now too. So
I was going to say, yeah, that was a hot take. Saying a hot take was a hot take by me. Cause they are literally like stacked, but no, he's
at the time, though, to your credit, they were a little further apart on our board, at least if you're just going straight off the board. So
I guess I'll give it to myself. But I caught him in Arizona. I caught him live. He looked really, really good. It wasn't anything that I had not seen this past summer on the Cape, where he was also super impressive. But he just he had a keen awareness for the barrel. Plus bat speed, it's legit plus power to the pull side. I really like the swing, rotates super well, and he does. I think that he convinced a lot of people early on, of his ability to stick behind the plate, moves really well, did a nice job corralling balls in the dirt, received well with soft hands. The arm is at least above average for me, called a really good game. The approach I was also impressed with, right on right breaking balls is still a little bit of a bugaboo, but it hasn't necessarily hindered the production early on. And when you zoom out and you look at the product of work with Lomavita, kind of how we were talking about Santucci early on, and when you simplify it to, okay, you have an athletic left-handed pitcher, clean delivery with borderline 3+ pitches, how long does that last? And with Lomavita, for me, you've got a guy that's going to, one, I have no question that he is going to be able to stick behind the plate. So you've got an athletic catcher with 55 arm, depending on who you ask, perhaps a 55 hit, at least 55 power. Mentioned the above average arm, and the most underrated aspect to his game is his speed and running ability. He this summer turned in plus run times. He was moving down the line when I saw him in Arizona. He's already got three bags to his name this season. Like, how long does a catcher like that last? And if teams are really sold on the hit tool, and again, the production isn't hindered by the slight issue of right on right breaking balls, like that's not going to last past the top 20 to 25 picks, at least right now. It's not. Pac-12 pitching is a different animal, but I think
especially in what's seen as a slightly down draft class where you have a lot of corner profiles, if you have such a well-rounded college hitter who is a slam dunk catcher at the next level, I think in general the industry likes to push up college catcher demographic, and that's not even taking into account like likelihood of sticking or defensive reputation behind the plate. But if he's that good of a defensive catcher and he's putting up these sort of offensive numbers and he has the supplemental tools that you're talking about, like, that's a really attractive package overall. And he's coming off a really strong 2023 season. It looks like he's just coming out of the gate extremely hot. He's already a quarter of the way to his 16 home runs a year ago with 4 in 8 games. So it's a really appealing package. And again, I think if there's one profile the industry loves to push up the board, it's college catching. Maybe college catching and college pitching is just a demographic that teams and decision makers really covet and can't get enough of in the draft.
Yeah, and it might be right now because I'm feeling myself on the take, but I right now on February 28th, he will have new career highs in virtually every major offensive statistical category. I have very little doubt about it. He's going to hit 16 plus bombs, and he's getting double digit bags. I know he wants to get double digit bags, and he'll be able to. But and then also, like, physically, it's kind of that prototypical catcher's build, but he's really, really strong. It's all muscle. I'm just a really big fan. And the offensive profile, again, I really like, because it is legit plus power to the pull side. Really not even strictly pull side. Like, this summer, he was driving balls into the gap, into the right center field gap. He'll flash that more. And then if he's just doing what he's doing, like the one home run he hit on Sunday – was, I think I have a video of it on my Twitter, but he hit it all the way up the berm in left field at Salt River, and that, I mean, it had to have been 450 plus feet. And the operation itself is just super, super athletic, and the, like, I'm a huge fan of him, so I'm looking forward to watching him as conference play ramps up. And they've played a really good schedule so far too. Like, they haven't played, I guess, crummy teams, for lack of a better term.
Kansas State, Boston College, BYU, Connecticut, Sac State. Yeah, it's a good schedule so far for them.
Yeah. And then I guess the other guy that I caught pretty good and was impressed with was Kansas State shortstop Kalen Culpepper.
Mm-hmm. The more I see him, the more I really like him. His hands are just so fast.
Oh, man.
You have one swing on your Twitter of him. I don't know what the batted ball result was, but it's just a beautiful looking swing.
Batted ball result was long bomb out to left field at Arizona State. But he was similar to Loma Vita. It was more of a validating look than it was anything new. Like, he didn't flash anything that I was like, I didn't see Kalen Culpepper do that before. But it was like, it just reinforced my thoughts on him. It's just you mentioned it. It's a really explosive operation in the box with silly bat and hand speed. Like, the barrel is just zooming through the zone. It's a very aesthetically pleasing, in sync looking operation. He's consistently gets off quick, tight turns with his hips.
What did you think about him defensively? Like, did you get many chances with him at shortstop?
It was a quiet game against Cal, but I'm convinced that he's going to be able to stick at shortstop. The athleticism really translates. He's got soft hands. The actions are clean. He's got a good internal clock. The arm is a the arm's at least a 55. It's teetering on a six at the position.
I think I put it at a plus. I think it's a rocket.
Yeah, he lets it rip on the left side, and it's a pretty easy plus arm. So I'm convinced that he sticks at shortstop, and then the offensive profile again is very, very appealing, because I think it's plus power to the pull side. He hammered a triple off the wall in dead center, and it was an absolute laser. It was like he missed one early in his first at bat. He just got under one in his second, and it just kind of seemed like he was about to unload on a ball his next at bat, and he got it. It almost got out, but again, it's just a really good looking in sync operation. Hand speed, bat speed is all there, and very athletic shortstop with the arm to boot. So that's another guy where he's not going to last very long, at least looking at it right now, barring something extremely different. That's going really early.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out, and when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a guy that is maybe as high as Loma Vida and Culpepper in terms of the draft board, but a hitter that I was impressed with opening weekend, and I didn't get a full look just because I had some off the field things to take care of opening weekend, unfortunately. But Billy Amick at Tennessee, Clemson transfer, I think he was really exciting addition to the roster for many people. You had highlighted him in the offseason in our college preview content, Peter, both you and Teddy. I was really impressed with just his bat speed, the raw power he had, the approach at the plate, actually. And I didn't expect for him to be a player that I was impressed with his approach, but he made some inner eight within at bat adjustments against sliders that I thought were impressive in my specific look. I do think that like sliders and recognizing those pitches and making more contact against them is actually one of the weaker parts of his game overall. So it's kind of surprising that was something that stuck out to me in a positive way. But I mean, just yesterday he added his fourth home run of the season. He boosted the average up over 300. He's hitting 306, 359, 722. But just the raw power and bat speed and intent that he swings with is really impressive. He managed to hit one 93-mile-per-hour fastball from Cal Robinson down the right field line that he was a little late on and a little under on, and he had enough strength to just muscle the pitch out despite not barreling it up with the best contact. And then he fully got into a couple pitches that he deposited into the left center field fence, or over the left center field fence, I should say. And then defensively, I'm not sure like how good a defender he is at the hot corner, but he made a few plays that were pretty impressive, including one really tricky backhand grab heading towards the third baseline, throwing across his body in foul territory right past the bag, and making a really impressive throw to first base on a line to get a runner out. So I think he was pretty impressive all around. I do think it's probably more of a power over hit offensive profile, but he was one of the hardest hitting batters in terms of 90th percentile exit velocity in 2023 among our top college hitters. I would expect him to still be in that sort of category at the end of the year in 2024. But I was pretty impressed with him in my very brief in-person look, and then just throughout the year so far, the performance he has. He's tied for the team lead in homers with Tennessee. I think he's going to be a really intriguing power-oriented right-handed bat for someone. And if he can keep showing that sort of third-base defense, I think on the site right now for us, he's showing up as a first baseman. I'm not really sure why that's the case. We have him listed as a third baseman internally, but he's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's another guy that I'm happy you brought him up. He's obviously been performing reasonably well early. I've been mostly impressed with the power that he's flashed. It's, for me, it's no doubt plus. I really like the swing. You mentioned it's easy bat speed. Super, super strong kid. Like, it's just a really strong swing in general. Really sound wrist strength, forearm strength, almost a barrel chested look. He is all muscle, gets plenty of torque in his swing. I really like how he finishes. And I think the biggest thing for him, is just not going to be getting completely diced, by SEC pitching, which I don't think he will. Like, it is power over hit for me and you, it sounds like as well.
Yep.
There is clear, and it's a pretty cool take. But there's clear like 20 plus home run upside. Mm-hmm. And if he's not running an absurd K rate.
Yeah. Sliders, like SEC sliders, I'll be curious to see how he handles that pitch type specifically. I guess changeups as well has been, maybe an issue, but yeah, seeing what the strikeout rate is looking like how aggressive he is outside of the zone, the sort of adjustments he'll be able to make against those off-speed pitches, because I think he has more than enough bat speed to handle fastballs. That's not really too much of a question for me right now. But yeah, wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we have him in like fringe day one range right now. If he just keeps performing, he probably just solidifies like a locked-in day one profile.
Yeah, at least right now, it's hard for me to think he gets out of the top two rounds. I don't know where he ends up going ultimately, but I do think it is a top two round type. But again, you mentioned it. The main thing for me is just going to be seeing how he does against, like, he'll handle the heaters fine. And there are some premium fastballs in the SEC. And I think he's going to put some really good swings on some really good fastballs that are going to make people go, whoa. But again, it's just a matter of how he handles himself against the quality breaking balls, which I think he'll handle himself fine enough. But I'm a big fan of the swing in general. Like, it's easy it's a very quiet, easy operation. He does not sell out to get into his power. He really drives the baseball with authority. That's what I've been impressed about early on. Like, even his outs have been have been barrels, and the quality of impact he generates.
He had one ground ball that he hit basically directly to the opposing team's shortstop, but it was a rocket and absolutely ate him up. And I think it went as a single. Maybe in the majors it'd be an error, but yeah, he has annihilated the baseball and had a lot of hard hit outs, as well as plays like that where he just creates a hit out of something that really shouldn't be, just because of the velocity he can put on the ball.
Yeah, just a super strong kid, like an imposing presence, I think, for in the opposing batter's box for pitchers. Like, obviously, I mean, you know who Billy Amick is. Like, you're not going to be like, whoa, who's this kid? But I think, like, he commands the box really well. Like, he's a presence in there. And he plays with a little bit of a swagger that I like. And then the big thing is defensively, where it is a little bit more iffy as to whether or not he makes a move, whether it's to left field or maybe over to first. But I think that, like, he's going to get a shot absolutely to prove himself over at the Hawk corner professionally. I don't know how long he'll stick there. Maybe he sticks there his whole career. Maybe he makes a move. But he has, at the very least, held his own early on. So that's another guy that I'm very excited about as we get into conference play.
Are there any players that you're maybe concerned about or still waiting on them to kind of have that moment where you get excited about, or players that just have some question marks for you? I've got a couple that I could bring up, but curious if you have any immediate names.
I'm trying to think a little bit. It is still early. I guess in the breadth of impressiveness, to buy myself a little bit more time as I think.
And I can go into my players if you want to.
Yeah, I was going to mention one more that I was like, Brayden Montgomery is another guy that I've been super, super impressed with early. It's more just been like reinforced, but it's also like he continued to take another step forward with his approach and overall bat to ball skills, like plus bat speed from both sides, plus power from both sides. Everyone knows about the arm. He's absolutely crushing fastballs in the early going. And then on the mound last night, I think I said it exactly like this, but I'm firmly in, like, the Brayden Montgomery is a hitter camp, but he moves really, really well on the mound. There's present arm speed. The fastball is upper 90s with carry. It's more of like a fun arm, but last night he randomly turned over a plus changeup. It doesn't change my thinking at all, but it just
I really do think if he was just a pitcher, he would be like a legitimate pitching prospect, because I've seen a good breaking ball out of him. The fastball has solid traits, like the arm strength is obvious, and then we're talking about a changeup here too. Like, if this is a guy who literally was never focused on hitting and was just refining his craft as a pitcher, I think he has like really exciting upside.
Yeah,
but I'm with you. I think like hitter first as a prospect at this stage.
But it is a very intriguing package on the mound. No one's going to take the bat out of his hands unless things go extremely awry, which I don't think they will. But he is a fun player on the mound. But it's a really good body. Like, he has added, it looks like, and just looks even a little bit more physical, especially in the lower half. Just again, he's been annihilating baseballs in the early going. It's plus power from both sides, plus bat speed. It's just a really quiet and then explosive operation.
Yeah, he's hitting 393 514 857. He's got two more walks than strikeouts, 7-5 there, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, a triple. Pretty good start for him with Texas A&M this year.
Yeah, and so I think that he's perfectly ranked at 9, I believe. So he's been another guy that I've been very impressed with in the early going.
Well, let me bring up two players that I have some concerns about, and I'm curious what you think with them moving forward. And I think on the surface, maybe it'd be a bit weird to share these concerns, because both these players are among the national leaders in strikeouts on the mound and then home runs as a hitter. And that's Brody Brecht and Vance Honeycutt. Brecht has a 1.74 ERA after 2 games, 10.1 innings between Seton Hall and Auburn. He's near the national lead with 22 strikeouts. He had 11 strikeouts in both of his first 2 games. But it's just the walks are still a massive concern for me. He walked 6 batters in his first game, just 4.1 innings. He walked 4 batters in his second game. I mean, if he's not showing any improvement in the walks throughout the season, I just he will either be an outlier college first round pitcher, or he just won't go in the first round because his walk rate is just so much higher than the typical or even the most extreme college pitcher drafted in the first round. There is a mechanical change that he's shown early in the season. There's a little bit more depth to the arm stroke, which I thought was interesting just because I had wondered if his arm action was just so compact and so fast that he couldn't repeat it. So far, it hasn't really made a material difference in the actual strikes. I know we were talking about the added pitches that he was adding to his mix with Iowa pitching coach Sean McGrath. I haven't been able to see all of his starts so far. I've watched a little bit of them. But, I mean, it looks like the same explosive pitcher who I'm just kind of waiting to take that step forward in strikes. And then with Vance Honeycutt, he has also shown a little bit of a difference in his mechanics so far this year. In the box as a hitter, his posture is different. He's standing a bit more upright. It's a little bit more even towards the plate. It's less crouched. But the swing itself, the hands, the stride, all that looks reasonably similar. And again, he's hitting well. Like, the stats on the surface are solid. He's hitting .310. He has 5 home runs already in just 8 games. But I just wonder about the quality of the hit tool with him. I bear down on a few games with Honeycutt, and I just get the sense that he's a guess hitter too frequently. Sliders in particular and secondaries overall seem to still be weaknesses for him. He pulls out too often with his lower half. I wonder if, like, the change in setup with his legs being a little bit more even is trying to prevent him from pulling out too often. I know, as like hitters, like, there are different ideas of, like, staying open and then moving towards an even stance in your stride and your load can help you do that. He's starting out in more of an even stance this year. But there are just some ABs where he just looks behind and lost and honestly looks like he doesn't know what's coming. I'm curious to see how that will change moving forward because, the production has been solid. He's hitting for power. He's hitting for all fields power. He has speed. He can play great defense in center field. Like, maybe it's just one of those players where the tools are so good that the question marks that he has, like maybe an Enrique Bradfield type in a much different way, will still make him an appealing first-round player just because the tools package and the athleticism is so good. But I was really hoping to see maybe a more advanced approach from him early this spring, and maybe I'm overreacting too much because some of these ABs were against Trey Savage with ECU, who has a great fastball-slider changeup combination and really seems to mix his off-speed pitch as well. I could just be too bearish on him at this point, but I do have some concerns still with, like, the pure hitting ability of Vance Honeycutt.
Yeah, speaking of Savage, he's another guy that I thought was really good early on in his first two starts. But with Honeycutt, I'm with you. He's got all the tools in the world, I guess, except for a hit tool.
That's the one.
No, he's an elite-level defender, great athlete, plus runner. It's plus power. But I'm with you. Like, I think that there is a lack of a hit tool. And I think that it's clear in just his – just the stat line alone that he's put up in his first couple of years at college at UNC. Like, he hasn't hit above 300, and you can say what you want about batting average and how meaningful a stat it is, but at the college level, like, yeah, for these guys
entirely, there is something to just hitting over 300 in college. If you're not doing that, I think they're pretty easy questions to draw about a hit tool. So yeah, for, like, at the major league level, if you don't want to care about batting average, that's fine. In college, you need to be hitting for average if you're an elite prospect.
Right, exactly. Like, to be ranked in this upper echelon, like, top tier guys, like, you need to be feasting on college arms for I think. And he is yet to do that. Yeah. But I'm with you that, like, I think at this point, like, you kind of have to just be all in on the fact that he is a power over hit guy. I think if he just, like, kind of quits towing the line a little bit and just accept the fact that he is going to strike out at a little bit of a high clip, like, I think he does still have, like, 20 to 25 plus home run upside at the professional level, and with the speed alone, like, he's got 25-25 type upside. But the hit tool right now, and it might be harsh, like, I'd probably give it a 40 or a 45.
I don't think that's harsh.
I think I have it as a 40, but I think that the pitch recognition skills
And hey, like we're talking about a guy who has pretty electric tools outside of that. There are players at the big league level who are 40 hitters who are still productive players if they're 40 hitters, if they're getting to that power, they're getting to that speed, they're playing a premium position. You can still be a very good player with a 40 hit tool. It just adds a lot of question mark. Like this is the one question mark he had earning of the year. I haven't seen a material difference in the hit tool early this season. But again, like I kind of opened up the podcast with, there is more time. I'm curious to see like how the swing is looking throughout the year, if that setup changes, like kind of what the thought process is with that setup change, just because it's interesting to me. But he is, like right now we have Vance Honeycutt over Charlie Condon on our board in our next update. I don't think that'll be the case.
Yeah, no, and again, like stuff can and will change. But early on, like the pitch recognition skills, and it's going to sound like we're like, at least I'm eviscerating him, but when you're talking about question marks, like this is a pretty glaring one. Like he's still a very exciting player. He's going to impact the game in a lot of ways. Even on nights where he goes 0-for-4 with two or three Ks, like he's still bound to make a couple of really quality plays in center field. But no, I think that the hit tool right now is below average.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. Like he does just kind of, I think you put it perfectly when you said that at times he kind of looks like a guess hitter, that I think sums it up well. Like it's, yeah, it, the approach needs work, the bat to ball skills need work. I'm curious to see how that looks as we get an ACC play in the talent of arms.
Absolutely
picks up even more
for sure. Okay, well those are all the players I really wanted to hit on today, Peter. Anyone else that is intriguing to you or anything else you want to mention before we hop out and get out of here?
I guess I forgot to mention Breck too, because that was another guy that you mentioned. You picked up on the mechanical change right away in his first start when going back and watching it. You mentioned it is a little bit of a deeper, longer arm stroke with still that trademark arm speed, but for...
Yeah, and there's like a visual of both of these mechanical changes in the draft piece I did. Like if you want to actually see the difference for yourself on the site, you can, like I tried to just grab images of that to kind of illustrate what I'm talking about. But yeah, there's a little more depth. He's deeper into his arm stroke. He gets a little bit more behind his body at the deepest point of his arm stroke. And I mean, that one jumped out to me right away because I just remember thinking how compact his arm action was last summer and last year. And the first pitch I saw from him, I was like, that doesn't look right, does it?
It is. Yeah, no.
We'll see what actually happens with that.
Yeah, last year it was super short and quick. This year, you illustrated the visual well, which is in a great piece, which I encourage everyone to read. But it is deeper and longer. Like, for better or worse, he right now, to me, is kind of just the same pitcher that he was last year. And we've hit on it with every single guy that it's so early and this could all completely change. But it's an electric arm talent. It's silly arm speed. He's a great athlete on the mound, premium body. I just think that there is so much reliever risk early. It's going to be hard to pull the trigger on an arm like this in the top 20 ish picks, top half of the first round.
Yeah, I would go fully first round for me. I mean, again, he's got a career 19.4% walk rate. So far this year, it's 21.7% walk rate. That's just so far outside of the bounds of like what is typical of a first round college pitcher that we've seen teams draft. It feels unimaginable to me that he goes in the first round if he maintains his walk rate. I mean, maybe he'll be the exception. Maybe the stuff is such that like he is an outlier arm type on arm talent. And maybe teams have advanced enough in their pitching development, like that teams like the Dodgers or the Rays will feel confident about getting him to throw more strikes. But he was a guy that you're like really excited for because you're hoping to see some material changes there. Again, I don't want to get too overboard here because it has just been two starts and maybe he's a guy who's just going to figure it out. And as he gets more reps, the strikes will come. He'll get more feel. He'll just be able to put the ball in the zone. But literally, if he just puts the ball over the plate, he's going to have tons of success. So I want to see him do again. Like, he's pitched well in terms of results for Iowa. He has struck out batters. He has not allowed a lot of runs. He's just working around so many runners that he's just putting on base for free. It's scary. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, like the stuff is thunderous. It's two double plus, arguably, pitches in his fastball and power slider. It's like, going into the season and into the season, he just needs to improve. The strike throwing in general really needs to improve, and then the quality of strikes as well. Like, if he's just throwing competitive pitches, the numbers are going to be absolutely silly. And the strikeout numbers are still going to be really impressive. I'm sure that teams aren't going to really hit him around much, especially as we get into Big Ten play. But I think that there is, like, for a first round arm, like, I'm with you in that, like, you know, at least early on, it's hard to imagine pulling the trigger on that, in the first 30 overall picks, but
yeah,
extremely exciting talent with upside. But, again, he looks more or less kind of like the same arm as he did last year.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Peter, anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, just weekly college content. Over on the site, I drop every Thursday a What to Watch For piece where I talk about five series, or at least early on, five series and or multi-team events, and what to look for in those. Teddy and I also drop the top 25 each Monday, and then draft podcast each Thursday, and college pod also each Friday or Thursday, but no shortage of content. And then also on my Twitter, I kind of spam everyone's feeds as we get going, but super busy stuff. And then in a super busy time, and then in a few weeks, my initial 2026 college rankings.
Awesome. Yeah. You're hard at work. I know it's busy season with the college season progressing. Hope you guys have been able to watch some college baseball. It has just been a lot of fun to actually react to what's happening, again, instead of previewing it. So we are in the full swing of things. We've got stuff coming out pretty consistently. I mean, on the pro side, we've got spring training, ramping up. There's a lot of stuff coming out from the prospect side. We also have the Prospect Wire on the website right now. So if you are like a fantasy fan, if you're just interested in prospects in general, this is kind of an expanded BAPR format for us. And is also just a place where we can get you prospect information in a quicker, more digestible way. There is a daily stats leaderboard for all of the prospects who are ranked top 30. There is a filterable and sortable stat dashboard below this piece, and it also features, which is maybe the piece I'm most excited about, we can also put amateur content here as well. So if you're just trying to keep up with prospect information in general, you probably have already been subscribed to BA, but this is another feature that we're adding to the site that hopefully makes that experience just a little bit easier for you. Let us know what you think about that feature. Like I said, I'm really excited about it. I like using it just as, again, as someone who wants to keep up with these players. It's fun for me, but like you would have known about Charlie Condon and Hagen Smith and kind of stuff they're doing from this as well. So hopefully that's just a way to service some information to you guys better on the site. So check that out. Check out all the content Peter's talking about and just BA in general. And we are very thankful and appreciative of your support because you guys, BA subscribers, allow us to have this show every week and talk about college baseball and go travel and see these players and talk to coaches, talk to players, and try and break them down the best we can for you. So thank you guys. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We will see you guys next week. So long.